Hello, and welcome to the Autodidactic Podcast with your host, Rick Dearman.
Hello, and welcome to the Autodidactic Podcast, Season 2, Episode 2. I'd like to apologize in the delay for getting this week's episode out. I ran into some technical difficulties, and also some difficulties in finding a quiet place to do the recording. Hopefully I'll be able to be more consistent in future. This week I'm going to start delving into the lives and study method of autodidactics throughout the ages and into modern times. I'm going to start with a person most listeners inside the United States will need no introduction to. I haven't yet worked out the format for these podcasts about autodidactics, but I'll generally start with telling you a bit about the person, what they accomplished, and then what we know about their methods. Then I'll try and dig in a little deeper into the methods they used and relate it to how we could emulate that today. The person I'm going to talk about today is Benjamin Franklin. Ben Franklin was born in what would become the United States of America in January on the 17th, 1706, and he died on April 17th, 1790. Franklin was an American autodidactic and one of the founding fathers of the United States. He was a leading writer, printer, political philosopher, politician, postmaster, science, inventor, humorist, civic activist, statesman, and a diplomat. Franklin became a successful newspaper editor and printer in Philadelphia, the leading city in the colonies, publishing the Pennsylvania Gazette at the age of 23. Benjamin Franklin became a luminary in everything from politics to physics, and he did this without modern educational techniques, such as schools, teachers, or the internet. Franklin was a prodigious inventor, but he never patented his inventions. Probably the first advocate of open source, open knowledge movement, he wrote, "As we enjoy great advantages from the inventions of others, we should be glad of an opportunity to serve others by any invention of ours, and this we should do freely and generously." Franklin studied electricity, ocean currents, population and demography, light wave theory, and meteorology. He was an avid chess player, and with a friend learned Italian via chess. The loser of these matches had to perform some task given by the winner, such as reciting sections of Italian grammar or 100 animal names in Italian at the next meeting. Ben Franklin's autobiography can give us many clues about the man and how he used his time, and many of his writings are available online to read. I'll put links to his writings at the end of the transcript on the autodidactic.info website. Although there's a lot to learn from his writings, I believe Franklin had two methods that we can emulate as autodidactic. The first one is known today as deliberate practice, and the second is measurement or monitoring. Of all the things Franklin did, these two lend themselves most to self-study and autodidactism. First, let's look at deliberate practice. What is it? Deliberate practice refers to a special type of practice that is purposeful and systematic. While regular practice might include mindless repetitions, deliberate practice focuses attention and is conducted with a specific goal of improving performance. What sets deliberate practice apart from other training methods is a rigorous sequence of ongoing performance assessment, tailored goal setting, and systematic skill building informed by expert feedback. Franklin shows us how he used deliberate practice when he taught himself to become an author and a better writer. Let me read an excerpt from his autobiography. "About this time, I met with an odd volume of The Spectator. It was the third. I had never before seen any of them. I bought it, read it over and over, and was much delighted with it. I thought the writing excellent and wished, if possible, to emulate it. With this view, I took some of the papers and, making short hints about the sentiment of each sentence, laid them by a few days and then, without looking at the book, tried to complete the papers again by expressing each hinted sentiment at length and as fully as it had been expressed before, in any suitable words that should come to hand. Then I compared my Spectator with the original and discovered some of my faults and corrected them. Benjamin Franklin, autobiography. Here, Franklin is doing what is known as deliberate practice in order to improve his writing. K. Anders Ericsson likens it to how artists practice by trying to imitate some famous work. Mathematicians are taught to attempt to prove most theorems themselves when reading a book or a paper. Even if they can't, they'll have an easier time compressing the proof to its basic insight. Deliberate practice can be used to learn any skill from music to computer programming. Let's use some examples of how you could use deliberate practice for something other than writing, as Franklin did. Many people are self-taught programmers who use programming textbooks to learn a programming language. But if you just read the book cover to cover, you're not going to get the maximum benefit from it. Instead, when you come to a section in a chapter showing a small snippet of code to open a file, for example, look at the snippet, close the book, and then actually try to create a program yourself without reopening the book. Chances are you'll fail. However, when you open the book back up, you'll be able to compare your work against the snippet, and you'll get immediate feedback about where you went wrong. Otherwise, when studying, you can use this method by simply reading the page of a book you're learning from, or a recorded lecture. Close the book and pause the video, and try to write down everything you've just read or listened to. Try not to do a summary, but to remember everything. It would be tedious to reproduce an entire book verbatim, but this method will give you immediate feedback about knowledge gaps. It might show you that the information you missed tends to always be at the end of paragraphs, so you could modify your behavior to focus on the end of paragraphs. But deliberate practice is bigger than this. The excerpt I read from Franklin didn't cover the three primary things you must do for deliberate practice, mostly because Franklin himself had already done these other steps off camera. The three steps are: have a specific goal in mind and break it down. Break down what you want to know or practice into a well-defined smaller amount. For a textbook, this might be into chapters, for example. Second, create a plan. Have a written plan for how you're going to practice with the times and a schedule. For example, you might decide on a chapter a week with X number of exercises. And the third is get a coach or some form of feedback. This is probably the most important thing to have. Remember, Franklin used the original Spectator articles as feedback to compare against his own writing. You will also need some type of feedback mechanism. In the programming example, you have the author's version of the file opening program. When you do your plan, you're going to need to keep your goal in mind. When you break this down into practice sessions, you need to have a goal in mind for each session as well. So goals may be sing or play a certain song at a specific speed with no mistakes 3 times in a row, or memorize the first 10 digits of pi, or type 50 words a minute with no errors, or summarize each page of the textbook with no knowledge gaps. If you are interested in deliberate practice, I recommend the book Peak by K. Anders Ericsson. Now, the other way that we can emulate Franklin is tracking or monitoring of progress. Franklin had a little book where he would track his errors each day, monitoring self to try and improve. A phrase most managers and most companies will immediately recognize is, you get what you measure. It's because it's human nature to shoot for the objectives which are set, and it's human nature to pay attention to the metrics which are being measured. However, a word of caution. You may need to make sure that what you're measuring is the correct thing, or the instrument you're using to measure is the correct instrument. For example, just measuring time sat at a desk studying doesn't indicate the amount that's been learned. Sir Arthur Eddington, an English astrophysicist, told a short story involving a scientist studying fish by pulling them up with nets. And after checking all the fish hauled up, the scientist concluded that there is a minimum size of fish in the sea. But the fish seen were determined by the size of the holes in the net, and because the smaller ones slipped through, they were unmeasured. So the instrument you use can affect what you see. Therefore, you need to think carefully about what it is you're trying to learn and try and find some way to measure your ability. If you're learning a textbook, you might create a simple form to fill out at the end of each chapter with some questions rating from 1 to 7, where 1 is definitely not and 7 is definitely yes. Some statements might be, I understand all the concept of this chapter, I found this chapter easy, etc. This type of survey would let you judge how well you learned from the book, and if you should reread or find an easier or more difficult resource. If you were learning a skill such as how to remember the names, you might score yourself 2 points for all the names you remembered and -1 point for any name forgotten. Then you review your scoreboard each week, plotting it to spot trends. You might discover that you typically fail to remember when introduced to a group of people at the same time, but are normally okay with introduced individually. Then you can use some deliberate practice to focus on remembering names at group introductions. If you were learning photography, you might have your photos scored based on framing, lighting, focus, filtering, exposure, etc. Then you design practice sessions with deliberate practice on the elements where you scored low. So, for monitoring, you need to break down and list your goal into things that can be measured. You need to eliminate from the list anything where the measurement isn't essential. Be clear on what you need to measure, why you're measuring it, and how you're going to measure it. And then schedule periodic reflections on the measures themselves. Design repetitive and deliberate practice to overcome measured defects. Remember, you can't improve what you don't measure, but measuring the amount of time spent generally isn't useful. Review what you're measuring in order to design better practice, and review your measures to ensure you're still measuring essential items. Right, well, that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Please give me a rating on any platform you're listening to this podcast on, and please share the podcast with friends and family who might be interested. Also, let me know if you find these explorations of the methods used by didactics useful, and if there's someone in particular you'd like me to research. As always, you can leave me feedback on the website, autodidactic.info, or send me an email to rick@autodidactic.info. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Autodidactic Podcast with your host, Rick Dearman. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider giving a donation via PayPal. Thank you very much, and see you again next time.